Welcome, everyone, to RB1 : A Fantasy Football Podcast, part of the Fake Teams Podcast channel. I am the consummate professional, presenter of the DeAndre Swift gift for those with a Swift lift up the fantasy gift list, first ranking officer of the Terry McLaurin Stan Club and BFS with the Oracle, your humble host, Pete Rogers. And I am joined by some of the guys. We have the Duck Father, governor and overseer of the Derrick Henry Rage Manor, DK Metcalf's number one admirer and caster of the double reverse chutzpah, resident old man Clark Barnes, and loather of Adam Gase, doubter of John Gruden's Jacobs Handel shtick, lifeguard in training at your neighborhood, Chase Claypool, and thinks your favorite team is run by donkeys, the ginger scruffy man, Nick Botiford. Guys, how are we doing today?
Doing great, Pete.
Good, Pete. How are you?
I am doing well. We may be joined by Jordan later. We shall see. I will say, to start off the show, do you guys ever, have you ever driven where, yes. Like, you're
oh, right.
Have you ever driven a car, like, you're doing a route that you've done so many times that you just kind of, like, zone out and go into autopilot while you're driving, and so you're just kind of, like, zoning out autopilot, and so I did this today when I was going to and from the market. I was going to the market, autopilot, drive, coming up a hill, and I see this, like, black lab who's clearly walking with his owners, haven't seen the owners yet, like kind of coming over the hill. And my brain, remember, I'm in the middle of like rural New Hampshire, northern New Hampshire. My brain first thought, oh shit, that's a panther. Like, what the fuck am I, what are we doing here, brain? Like, the first thing my brain is thinking is like, I'm about to like stumble upon this black panther, like stalking in the middle of the road in northern New Hampshire. So that was my anecdote for the day.
If I can paraphrase what I'm hearing, you're asking, does your brain sometimes do stupid things? Yes.
Yes.
Every time the lights go out, I check my phone to see if it was an EMP attack or if it was just the lights going out. Yeah. So I got that.
Have you guys been having a lot of power outages recently? Because we've been flirting with that for like the last week.
We had one the other day. It was extremely windy, but it came back on. So it was fine.
Yep.
Things are pretty standard over here.
Yeah, we had our first snowfall this weekend, and during that we got some strong winds and our powers like in the morning flickering every so often, which made the internet really exciting because you would have internet and then it would flicker out and then it would flicker right back on, and then, you know, 5 minutes later the internet would click back in, which was fine for me, but for Becca, who had classes during this weekend, not so great, as she was flickering in and out of classes in mild frustration. All right, well, let's talk some football. As always, that's what we do on this show. We got some NFL news to get to, and then we're going to play a little bit of a Would You Rather? But first, let's tackle that news. Headlining the news would be the losses that the Eagles suffered this week. We had Zach Ertz, who busted his ankle, I believe, and is out now 3 to 4 weeks. And Miles Sanders, who tweaked his knee again, and he is certainly out Thursday night against the Giants. But they're also thinking that he could be out the following week. Both of those guys. Well, Nick, let's start with you. For Zach Ertz missing extended period of time, I know you've talked about this before, but this is go return Dallas Goedert to your lineup, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty much everybody who didn't draft like Travis Kelce is hurting at tight end. And
George Kittle is back, yeah. and he is back in a big way, and I'm very happy about that.
That's true, yeah. But anyway, Dallas Goedert is a very good tight end, and the Eagles team is just hemorrhaging players like nothing I've ever seen before in consecutive years. Yeah, if you need tight end help, go get Dallas Goedert. We don't know when he's coming back, but there's a very good chance
to come off of IR this week.
He's so eligible too.
He's eligible. And I think that I'd read beat reporters being like Jalen Reagor and Dallas Goedert are like set to return. But you're right. It's important to like, they can come back from IR, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they will be taking the field. But my guess would like, I feel like especially Dallas Goedert, given how productive he was to start this season, I wouldn't be surprised if the Eagles with Zach Ertz's injury kind of like try to nudge him back onto the field, maybe a little sooner than he should be.
Well, that and they're trying not to pay Ertz.
Right. That's also true.
So it might be like, I mean, or not pay him a lot. Clark, right. You got a smirk. What's going on?
Yeah, so with Zach Ertz, it begs the fantasy question, if a player who's not doing anything falls over and doesn't play anymore, does anyone notice? So the Eagles are struggling mightily, and those who are wondering if Travis Fulgham was going to, I think Travis Fulgham, and Fulgham sounds wrong as the pronunciation, but it's what everyone was saying. He followed up his very strong week with another strong week, and a couple of balls that you like to see for these types of waiver wire pickups where Carson Wentz didn't know what to do, and so he made a horrible play by just chucking it up to someone, and it was Fulgham 3 or 4 times. So I think that he's going to be picking up the slack if anyone is. I know that the Eagles have a lot of players set to return, but if maybe folks in your league didn't think it was serious and left him back out here, I would definitely pick up Fulgham. And I agree that Goddard's an exciting pickup just because he's really good, kind of regardless of what happens with Zach Ertz.
Yeah. Do you, Clark, are you buying any Boston Scott stock with Sanders?
Yeah. I mean, he'll get the start. He'll split carries with someone, but he's an exciting player. And starting running backs at this point in the season are tough to come by. So if I was in a fab situation, I'd probably go 20-25% of my fab. If I really needed a running back, since we don't know what's going on with Sanders, I would at least price enforce with like 10% of my fab.
So Sanders, he is supposed to miss between 1 and 2 weeks. It looks like he really, really, really lucked out.
Because that knee, it's the knee and the hamstring have been bothering him all year, and you're very happy to see that it's only kind of a minor little dingy.
Yeah, it's the problem is that they have this Thursday night game, then they play next Sunday, the following Sunday. And then they go on bye. And so I agree with everything you're saying, Clark. We need to add Boston Scott if we need a running back. And I was kicking myself earlier because we talked, like, I don't know, whenever Barkley went out on the podcast about how Devontae Freeman would be the lead back there. And I was like, I mean, I said, add him if you need a running back, if you really need a running back. But he's going to be really terrible. And he is terrible. But everybody needs a running back. And in so many leagues now, you know, where I got like Kenyon Drake or Nick Chubb or Sanders, I'm just like, why didn't I? And you can always use, no matter how crappy they are, you can always use somebody who's going to get like 17 touches.
Devonta Freeman falling for like 60 yards on 15 touches is like PPR gold.
Nick, I think you raise a good point. I think 25% might have been too aggressive, but you raise a good point of running backs valuable. Are we going to talk about Devontae Freeman at all, or is this my opportunity to do that?
I was not planning on spending any time for the podcast talking about Devontae Freeman, but go.
There were some players for the Giants who looked okay in that just worst fest of a football game. And Devonta Freeman had a couple of runs, but anyone who's tempted, I mean, if you got him, okay, and he is a warm body, but if you thought the Cowboys looked inept at times, now we have a good idea of why that was. Jason Garrett spreading joy across the Northeast with the New York Giants this year.
I know we're going to get into Would You Rather, and this isn't one of mine, but who would you rather coach your favorite team, Jason Garrett or Adam Gase?
I mean, Jason Garrett doesn't actively make all superstars around him terrible. It's just fair. Most of them, I think.
Just most. Just makes your offense painful to watch.
Yeah, I think the one thing maybe that Garrett has going for him then that Gase doesn't is that Gase, no matter what, is like dead last in the league in plays run. And if I have a terrible coach, I just want as many opportunities for him to not completely suck. And I think Garrett like has the leg up in that regard.
For those at home, the next two games that the Eagles have, Giants and Cowboys, and then they go on bye, and then they play the Giants again. So
that's pretty good.
Boston Scott.
Yeah. Two pretty good games to cash in on Boston Scott.
Also the NFC East, not a single team in it has a winning record. Gotta love that division.
That's like 3 years in a row that they've
gold
been
standard
bad,
right there. Gold standard of the league. Let's move on. Some more tight end injury news. Jonnu Smith has an ankle injury, which seems to be mild, but looks like he's possibly could keep him out for a little bit of time. And in stepped our boy, and by our boy, I mean never heard of this guy until he took over for Jonnu Smith. Anthony Firkser is coming in and catching eight of nine targets for 113 yards and a touchdown in the Texans shootout. Holy buckets. So certainly Firkser, I have him on my waiver wire ads for this week. If Jonnu Smith misses any time, Firkser is obviously a guy to go add off waivers.
Yeah, Firkser was sapping Jonnu Smith's ceiling both last year and somewhat this year, although this year Johnny's just been getting it done with intense efficiency. From what I saw, I think Smith is going to be okay. I don't think it was an ankle, right? And it wasn't that big of a deal.
It doesn't seem like it's it looks like that he could be back for this week, for week seven, or they might hold him for an extra week, but doesn't seem to be super serious.
Okay. The problem is they face Pittsburgh. Now after that, then you get Cincinnati, but I don't know how much you're going to get out of, albeit a high targeted tight end against Pittsburgh, but hey, can't fault you for chasing volume.
Plus it's a situation where if Jonnu Smith, if he comes in, if he plays week seven, a little dinged up and he leaves cause he got dinged up again, you don't hate to see Firkser come back into play there. Running back injuries that we saw, these two guys left during their games, and we have an update on one of them. So we'll start with him. Raheem Mostert left the 49ers game banged up, and it seems like Kyle Shanahan has come out and said, I had it in front of me, and then you know what I did? I was checking my phone, which clears your notifications on your home screen like a noob. So now I have to refind it. But I expected to miss sometime. Will likely go on IR, which means he's out for 3 weeks with a high ankle sprain, which means it's back to Jerick McKinnon season.
One, I really like the 3 week IR. We should just
I do like that too. Let's keep that NFL for the rest of times.
For player safety and mainly selfishly for fantasy. Really enjoy that. Nick, resident RB1 podcast doctor, do we have word on when we can expect to see Tevin Coleman return to the fold?
Oh, I have no idea. I haven't even thought about him in ages. He's been, he was just so inefficient. It's so weird that Shanahan just loves him, but he does. I can look up to see
Tevin
what his
Coleman,
deal is. But
the last update is just that he's been still on IR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was supposed
and
to be
he's unlikely
six
to
eight
return
weeks.
Before week seven. So.
What do you guys think of Jermichael Hasty?
Who?
So this is the type of offense where someone who would beg the question who from a fantasy football podcast has burst onto the scene before. So I think it is absolutely a situation.
Yeah. So he's the current backup. Jeff Wilson Jr. is battling a calf injury. And so then the next guy
God,
up
49ers
is
backfield. Stay
Michael
healthy.
Hasty. Yeah.
Good Lord.
But I think he's worth an ad.
Yes. Well, he had 9 carries for 37 yards against the Rams. So, yeah. Definitely this backfield. I mean, everyone gets injured, but it also seems like it really doesn't matter who's back there. They will always get production.
Well, Shanahan really took over for his dad, and I was expecting Kubiak to keep rolling with that, but Shanahan can just turn any running back who is willing to hit the hole or do what he's supposed to into a pretty good running back.
So yeah,
I agree completely, Nick. Definitely worth a pickup.
The other big injury we saw, not big, but another injury that happened mid-game was Mark Ingram left the Ravens game with an injury. I haven't seen an update on how long that's going to keep him out, but it did open the door for a little extra work from Gus the Bus Edwards, who actually led the backfield in touches. Wasn't super productive. He had 14 carries for 26 yards and a touchdown.
He out-snapped him and out-touched him. It's hilarious. Dobbins
out... Well, Dobbins had Gus had more carries, but not even. Dobbins had 9 carries and 2 catches. That's less than 14 carries.
It was, I think the total was 14 to 11 on the touch count, and Andy outsnapped him. And he's been one of the most efficient runners for a long time. His little claim to fame has been Gus Edwards. He's led the league in yards per carry for 2 years or something, because he just barely qualifies for the carry threshold. I think he's the guy to add. The coaching staff likes him.
Wait, were you saying that Gus Edwards out carried and out snapped J.K. Dobbins?
That's my understanding.
Yes, that is correct. Sorry, I thought you were saying the other way around. Yes, no. That's, I agree with you. Gus Edwards is the back to go add, because when Mark Ingram left, suddenly it wasn't J.K. Dobbins who got thrown into a larger role. It was Gus Edwards. Nick, we're hilarious. On the same wavelength. It took us a while, but we're there.
I interrupted you.
So I thought I was going to be sneaky saying that Gus Edwards is completely worth going out to grab. He has played what I would like to call the Jamal Williams role of a back who's not getting a ton of work, but looks he's very good. He's not an absolute superstar. He doesn't have the quickness of J.K. Dobbins, but the scheme that the Ravens run, they need someone like Mark Ingram and like Gus Edwards, in that a back is going to take the ball and run as fast and as hard as he can into what is probably a gaping hole and then pick up a whole bunch of yards. And so he'll definitely continue to split carries and touches with Dobbins, and Dobbins is the more exciting player. But Gus Edwards is going to absorb that Mark Ingram role that last year saw, what, like 12, 14 touchdowns. So even if Ingram isn't going to miss time, I think Gus Edwards is definitely worth going to add, because it's only a matter of time. Ingram does look a little slower this year. Maybe it's because he's injured. I don't know. But I've liked Edwards for a while, just a very solid player on a team that needs to return to running the ball, because for some reason, Lamar Jackson has regressed as a passer.
Yeah. Sorry. Lamar, damn it.
What happened? It's like Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen switched bodies in some kind of like Freaky Friday situation. I don't know what's going on.
It's funny because did you guys see the play that Lamar had, which I know we should get to the segment here, but Lamar, where he like just froze. He was like about to take off down the right side and then just throw, and he like he did this any crazy delivery in front of the goal line, and you're like, you can do that. Why are you not connecting with Marquise Brown?
The Marquise Brown thing, it kills me. Absolutely kills me, both from just a football standpoint, but also because I have Marquise Brown in like three of my leagues. And every time they're like, Marquise Brown leads the NFL in intended air yards and is like all of these great stats that if he just fucking got a ball that was thrown well to him, he would be like a wide receiver one in fantasy easily. All right, let's finish up the news with just the feel good story. The Dolphins absolutely shatted on the Jets to the point where Tua Tagovailoa saw the field and then had a really nice moment where he sat out in the empty stadium after the game and FaceTimed his parents. So well done, Tua, for coming back from injury and taking the field. I wouldn't be too worried. I wouldn't
Devontae Parker got nicked up again, another soft tissue injury. And so in case you were sitting on the fence thinking about Preston Williams perhaps becoming a thing again, mm-hmm. Yes,
Preston Williams.
Also, shout out to Mike Vrabel for cheating brilliantly.
Mike Vrabel, genius effing move. It's not even, if it's in the rules, it's not cheating. Yes, that was. That's true.
It's only cheating if you get caught.
And it's not even cheating if it's in the rules.
But it could be like compromising the competitive integrity, which Goodell can just slap that on anything. As a Patriots fan, you're aware of this, Pete.
I also just like this. I want to also like, this is something that gets in my crawl, gets right up in there in my crawl space.
Craw.
No, I think it's crawl space. I think you're wrong, Clark. is this whole, like, it's a huge thing in baseball. The whole, like, unspoken rules, and it's, like, how you should play the game. And it's, like, if it's not explicitly in the rules, then I can do whatever the hell I want. If the rules, if it's just, like, the instance of, like, if the rules don't explicitly say I can't do this, then I'm going to do this until the rules tell me I can't. And so Mike Vrabel intentionally having too many guys on the field to save 40 seconds in the game so that the clock stops and he gets that 40 seconds back, which then basically led him to tie up the game, gave him that extra time to tie up the game and then win the game in overtime. Genius move, in my opinion. If you want to bat flip the living shit out of a home run that you hit when you're whatever it is, like down 0-3 when it's three balls to zero strikes and your team is up by six and it's in the fourth inning, whatever the hell these situations are that these MLB players all get pissy about because they hit a grand slam. Do the grand slam. Hit the freaking ball. This is your goddamn job to like go out there and play well. And you can't have to like these weird restrictions on how well you can play or what certain times you should be able to play at. This is why I don't watch baseball. Stupid fucking rules. Anyways, there's my little spiel. Mike Vrabel, you're a god. Keep up the good work. And there's the news. I'm getting hyped and we haven't even gotten to a segment. Let's, before we play Would You Rather, I got too excited. I got so excited I even forgot that we have to take a ad break. All right, we are back, and it is time to play the game that everyone knows and loves. Would you rather? If you've listened to this podcast at all before or went to high school, you know the rules of this game. We're just throwing out two different scenarios, people, players, things, what have you, and we're determining what you'd rather have. So, Clark, why don't you start us off?
So, I think this is an odd one, especially for what we expected at the beginning of the year, and it's would you Lamar Jackson or Deshaun Watson for the rest of the year? Deshaun Watson obviously got off to a bad start with a coach who insisted on running on every first and second down before maybe attempting to pass on third and long for four games. But in the past two games, we've seen Watson really come on. At the same time, we've seen Lamar Jackson seemingly not be able to rise to the occasion of the Ravens trying to put more on his shoulders in the passing game. Really smart coaching staff for the Ravens, so I would be very surprised if they don't just say, hey, we tried, and he's not a very good passer. We're just going to go back to running the ball for 400 yards a game, which is obviously good for Lamar. But Watson, we're starting to see what a lot of people have known that he could do, which is carry a team on his back, and he's done that just with flying colors for the past 2 weeks.
I think this is a really, really good one. My excitement might end up making me go with Watson just because he's free of Bill O'Brien, and it's so much fun to talk about that whenever, you know, on the podcast or
anytime we can writing. Talk about Bill O'Brien being gone, we talk about Bill O'Brien being gone.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's cleared 300 yards in each of the last two games. They got Green Bay on tap, who may have been exposed. They got the bye week, which, let's see here. So, all right. So I was hoping to kind of tie break with whether or not one of them had a bye, but they both have byes coming up in the next 2 weeks. Ultimately, the schedule for Deshaun Watson is quite a bit softer. Jacksonville, Cleveland, New England, Detroit, Indianapolis, Chicago, Indy, and Cincy. Whereas I won't read off all of Baltimore's, but they do have they have two dates with Pittsburgh in the fantasy regular season. And to your point earlier, Clark, about what they may try to have him do or not do, they've only lost once. And given that, and with his sort of middling production, I don't think they're going to be inclined to change things too much. If it's resulting in wins, then I think that they're going to be okay with like kind of having him do what he's doing. And I don't know, maybe they dial back the passes a little bit, but I think ultimately Deshaun Watson is going to be the guy here.
I would second that notion from a fantasy standpoint. Like Lamar Jackson, I feel like it would be a huge deal if Lamar Jackson threw for 300 yards. Obviously, he has a very high rushing floor. And so more likely his stat line is like maybe 170 yards through the air and then like 60 to 80 yards on the ground, which is great. But Deshaun Watson is the Texans offense. And so I feel like he's just going to throw for 300 yards with regularity. And that amount of air yards and passing and just like work in the game, the reliance on him to be this offense, I feel like is the move for fantasy where you're just going to like, he's going to chuck the ball all over the field. And that's going to lead to more production unless they do focus solely on the ground game in Baltimore and Lamar's rushing becomes, I think the biggest thing that's missing is just his efficiency in the red zone. Like last year, Lamar was just threw stupid amount of touchdowns ratio to his passing yards, and we've seen that ratio digress or regress. Whereas with Deshaun Watson, like the guy chucks the ball all over the field and also gets you touchdowns through the air.
Yeah, and final note here: the Ravens defense is good, whereas the Texans defense is embarrassing to Texans fans.
So yeah, Deshaun Watson will every game Watson plays will be a shootout, which. Yeah, you like that going forward. Nick, give us a would you rather.
Okay, so I was looking for some per play. Okay, yeah, here we go. I found it. So my first would you rather. Guys, would you rather have James Robinson or Jonathan Taylor? Discuss, and then I'll tell you why you're right or wrong.
I like that confidence. So,
I'll kick off here. So Taylor got off to a pretty hot start after Marlon Mack went down, and then has been relatively disappointing, I think, as the Colts have struggled here of late. I still think Taylor is the guy for me because I think the Colts are a slightly better team with a better line, and he has a little bit better of a pedigree. But this is a really good one because if you just shook your head no and wanted me to argue for James Robinson, I feel like I could.
Yeah, I love this because I think Clark hit the nail on the head where both of these backs have flashed. And then it's, for me, what it comes down to is like, will the Colts figure out their offense? Because if they can like figure out what their offense is, then I think Jonathan Taylor has a chance to like reliably succeed. But they are just in such turmoil right now. Whereas with the Jaguars we've seen them, their whole like legacy has been, we're going to run the football and that's it. And
Jaguars' legacy has been turmoil, whereas the Colts seem to be visiting temporarily.
Exactly. The Jaguars thrive. You were born in the darkness. I was, whatever. That's Bane quote. I nailed it. Anyways, just the thought that the Jaguars' offense has always been about the ground game, and they have a running back in James Robinson who's talented, like really good in both the rushing and passing. I think Nick, why don't you tell us who you think is wrong and right, and then I'll give you my answer.
Yeah, so I do think I'm glad that you guys agree. I think that this one is like a pretty tough one to distinguish. I've been looking over their usage totals. Taylor has 65 carries. He's got 10 targets. James Robinson, meanwhile, has 60 carries, 15 targets. I like the slight edge in the passing game usage there. The schedule heavily favors Jonathan Taylor, and that's something we talked about in the offseason where he's just got a real nice run defense schedule all the way through, like literally every game until week 16 when he has to face Pittsburgh. So that's a bit disconcerting, but James Robinson, he's got to face them, the Steelers, that is, in week 11. He's got to face Chicago, who's been so against the ground game. What's interesting is that both of these teams are really kind of low on the snaps per game pecking order. Jacksonville is 24th with 63.5, and Indianapolis is 27th with 62. So, I mean, we're talking about a play and a half difference here. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to roll with James Robinson, even though Taylor has a slightly easier schedule. The snap disparity between these two guys is just too strong, with Hines and Jordan Wilkins being so heavily involved. Now, Wilkins, I do think he did get injured in this last week, but the team has just shown they're not quite ready to commit to Taylor as being the bell cow, the like 60 to 70% snap guy. And I agree, whoever it was that said it earlier, whenever this offense figures out what it is, the Colts, that is, the ceiling is much higher. But right now, Gardner Minshew is carrying this team, and we like running backs on good teams, period. I mean, they just get into the red zone more often. They're in a higher volume of touches in those money zones inside the 10, inside the 5. So I'm going to go with James Robinson, which is not something I would have found myself saying. I mean, even maybe like 1 to 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think the one argument that is in Jonathan Taylor's favor is that you're totally right about the snap share. Even with that limited snap share, Taylor has performed. He's like the running back 14, I think, at PPR. And so if the Colts ever do just decide that like he is the backfield, then like he will presumably build upon that ranking. Whereas James Robinson, like this is his, not ceiling, but like, This is where he is. He's our RB7 right now in fantasy. And like, I don't see him getting much better. And Jonathan Taylor, if he saw more work, could join him in that elite stratosphere. So I think there is no wrong answer here, but I think that Jonathan Taylor is the right answer. All right. I'll do my first would you rather. And it is looking at two wide receivers, one you can get on waivers and one you can't. Who would you rather rest of the season, Juju Smith-Schuster or Tim Patrick of the Denver Broncos?
So it is difficult to figure out what is happening in Pittsburgh. It looks like they have drafted another absolute freak wide receiver in the second round who's going to take the league by storm. having said all of that, I think last week, almost everything that could have possibly gone right for the Denver Broncos did, while at the exact same time, everything that could have possibly gone wrong for the Patriots did, and the Broncos kind of squeaked it out. So I think Juju Smith-Schuster is going to be a star in this league for a really long time. I doubt that the Steelers are going to pay him. So if you are high on Juju in Dynasty, now's a good time to go and get him, knowing that this year may not be the most productive, but he gets open and catches the ball really well and has done that for a few years, which is really important to do as a wide receiver. So I'm going to stick it out. Better quarterback, better offense, better situation with Juju Smith-Schuster instead of Tim Patrick.
Yeah. For the record, through five games, Juju Smith-Schuster is averaging 10.2 half-point PPR points per game, while Tim Patrick of the Denver Broncos, 10.6. So basically, he's already a better wide receiver.
So I laughed when you proposed this, but I think I am going to go with Tim Patrick. And
yes, Nick!
I apologize to whoever it is. I know we have a huge audience, and they'll probably know, and they'll hit me up and say, hey, that was me. Somebody earlier today on Twitter, actually, might have been either Hardis or Gerard Evans, but they were talking about how Drew Lock is basically playing like he's Jameis Winston, where he's just launching bombs like nonstop. And you don't need to have a good quarterback attached to your fantasy receiver. You just need someone who's going to nonstop throw yellow balls. And that appears to potentially be the case with Drew Lock. Looking through the rest of the season schedule, I mean, there is a lot of favorable outings here for Tim Patrick. I know the Chargers could get healthy and maybe their defense resumes its former self, but right now it's just an injury-plagued unit. So they got them twice. They got, two dates with Kansas City. That's going to push the pace. Miami, Carolina, Las Vegas. There's a lot to like about that, upcoming schedule.
You've missed the fact that they play the Falcons in 3 weeks.
Great. Okay, great point. Now, the Steelers on the other side, you know, they got two dates with Baltimore, and Baltimore's slot coverage is a little bit lacking, so it's not terribly imposing, I suppose. And they get a couple of dates with Cincinnati. They got one with Jacksonville. I think what might be the differentiator is the knee injury. Juju has been missing Wednesday practices as though he's a longtime veteran, and he's being listed with a knee injury. I don't know what the knee injury is. It's possible that we have like a Doug Baldwin or Jerry Jeudy situation on our hands where it's a degenerative thing. Could be meniscus or I probably not. I think they'd hold him out for MCL. But the point is he's got some sort of injury that they're treating him like he is an old man for. And I don't know how that knee's going to hold up. It's totally friggin' bananas. But yeah, I think. Oh, of course. Oh, okay. Now I'm going to contradict myself. Noah Fant is out, and so is KJ Hamler. So when those guys return, is Tim Patrick's target volume just gone? I don't know. I think the takeaway here is that this is even a conversation, and right. That is enough to make this like, I don't know.
That's not great.
Yeah. Coin toss it.
That's not great for Juju, those Juju managers. So the thing is I am like, since the Broncos did play the Patriots, I obviously watched that game. And watching Tim Patrick, both how he was like targeted, how he was used down the field, the plays that he made against the Patriots secondary, which has been iffy this season. Like it's not what it was last year, but still, I just was very impressed at, first of all, what you're saying, Nick, the YOLO balls that Drew Lock is just chucking up there for him. He's a 6'4 guy who can get down the boundary and make plays on the ball. And we saw him do that multiple times against the Patriots last week. And so I think that ultimately Juju is the call just because we think he's the best receiver in Pittsburgh and we've seen it before with him. But I have no idea what to make of Juju anymore. And I think that like from now on, I'm going to hold myself to ranking him how I rank AJ Green and T.Y. Hilton, which is you are a wide receiver,
like blasphemy.
Bottom two until you show me something.
That's blasphemy. That's blasphemy.
So Clark, Tim Patrick,
my Juju hate.
He's been one of those team preseason guys that like the Sharks have just been racking up cash by deploying for a couple of years now. He's always shown potential. I think he was a big D1 school guy in college. He was like sort of, he's been this all potential dude for a long time. Maybe all it took was a friendly version of Jameis Winston to just lob him balls constantly for him to return fantasy value.
All right, let's move on. Clark, give us another would you rather.
Well, this sounds really boring now after your awesome.
No, do it again. I like this one. I like this one. I'm excited to talk about this one.
Keelan Cole or DJ Chark, we are mining bad teams for production here. Coming into the season, DJ Chark was much heralded. I would be surprised if he made it out of the fourth or fifth round of any of your drafts. And he's had a huge game. He's had a 26-point PPR game and looked relatively good, but battling injury, someone who I would bet went undrafted in your leagues, but someone who's flashed really good spurts of games before, is Keelan Cole. So the question is, who would you rather, the consistent Keelan Cole or the giant freak of nature who's battling injury in DJ Chark?
I will start us off. I love DJ Chark, and I think DJ Chark is, like, if you put him with Drew Locke, a Jameis quarterback, good Lord, that man would feast. But Gardner Minshew, watching Gardner Minshew throw deep balls is painful because the ball gets thrown and then sits there for 15 seconds while every DB swarms to it. And then DJ Chark has to out jump like 15 guys in order to make the catch. Keelan Cole, I tweeted about this today. He's averaging, I think it's like 6 targets, 4.5 catches, 60 yards, and a half a touchdown a game so far this season. And that is just like production that I can't fathom is on your waiver wire. He's, I believe last time I checked, like 30% rostered in Yahoo leagues. I think that the rest of the season, as the Jaguars are currently constructed, I would rather have Keelan Cole. I think DJ Chark is going to obviously give you a couple games where he goes for, you know, a buck 20 and 2 touches. But Keelan Cole, just the regularity with how he's producing right now is something that for me, I want to buy and then just like put him in my lineup and never think about it again, especially with the Jaguars. They have, I think they've only played the Texans once so far this season. So they get the Texans and then they get the Texans and then the Titans twice still. And then the Colts once. Colts secondary, that's on week 17. So, but we don't play week 17. So that's good. Anyways. So yeah, I think I would ride with Keelan Cole right now, which again, as we do these, as we talk, these are things that we not would have, choices we wouldn't have made at the start of the season.
So Chark's been super banged up. He had a chest injury and a back injury, and he was very, very questionable to play this week with an ankle injury. I think short term, if you need help, then it's Keelan Cole. I like the fact that the Jaguars have their bye in week 8. And so if you're looking long term for an ad, I would try to prey on the DJ Chark owner and get him while he's about to go on bye. Let him get a little bit more healthy. And then I would go back to rolling with him because I do think he's a more talented guy. But Cole, he'll probably light up the Chargers next week.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate, Keelan Cole, 30% rostered. That's inexcusable. It's like the wide receiver 26 or something in PPR. He should be rostered in every league. Nick, what do you got for another would you rather?
I got for another would you rather Joe Mixon or Antonio Gibson?
I already stuck up for your boy, Juju Smith-Schuster, who you've abandoned quickly. So we see where your loyalties lie there. And now you're going to force me into picking an injured Joe Mixon because the Washington football team is so terrible. What's his name? Kyler Allen or whatever it is, who always makes me feel like it's Keenan Allen with a huge score line, and then it's not. So I already don't like him for that. He's not very good. They played the Giants this week and looked absolutely terrible against perhaps one of the worst teams in the NFL. Antonio Gibson looks really good, and I'm hoping that we're not looking at a situation where a really talented running back is wasted for 3 or 4 weeks. But unfortunately, Jerick McKinnon is looking really good too, and Peyton Barber is getting the ball, so he's getting a bunch of touches. With how much I expect the Washington football team to score this year, which may be under 7 more touchdowns for the year, I feel like you just have to go with the Bengals, who are maybe the worst team in the league too, but they have a quarterback who can actually move the ball. And we've seen that even Joe Mixon can fall into the end zone a few times for this Bengals team. I don't like this at all, Nick.
This is a tough one. I, damn you, Nick. I want to say Antonio Gibson, but I really don't want to put my faith in the Washington football team and Kyler Keenan Allen, nor with the backfield that has, Clark, you were looking for JD McKissick, I believe, who has also been,
yes,
who's the one who's also been really good, in the Washington backfield. But the Gibson advantage is the fact that he is involved in the passing game. The Mixon disadvantage is the fact that he has been marginally involved in the passing game. But ultimately, I will side with Mixon in this choice that Clark said, that the Bengals offense could at least move the football. But I don't like saying it.
Yeah, so I think the thing that gives us pause is Mixon. There's a number of these backs this year where they're on the field for early downs and they're getting some passing game usage. They're not the 2 minute back. That's Mixon. It's also Antonio Gibson. What's frustrating about Mixon's upcoming schedule is that he has dates with Pittsburgh twice in the span of six games in the back half of the season. We don't like that because they can just shut opposing offenses down as a whole. But they did just lose, what is it, Devin Bush for the year, one of their stud inside linebackers. So maybe that makes things a little bit sweeter for him. Gibson, on the other hand, he has one date with Pittsburgh, but I think what might just be tilting the scales here is that Cincinnati has run is averaging the second highest offensive snaps per game at 72.3. while Washington is down at 21 with 68.2. So it's basically a 10 snap difference. That's a lot of snaps that Mixon will get to see that Gibson won't. McKissick is just eating up targets. He got like 8 last week or something. It is crazy. So he is seeing Gibson, that is. Gibson is seeing passing game usage, but I think that McKissick for now is just taking too much off of his plate, that the numbers that Mixon is going to put up in the meantime are just too much to ignore. So I will side with Mixon, but I think it's a decent conversation.
Yeah, I'm hoping that Alex Smith gets back in there. We have seen that Allen is just not great, and I don't think that Alex Smith will save the franchise, just because I think the reason everyone has looked so bad in Washington is that the front offensive line is so bad. But Alex Smith at least can add a little instead of only taking what's in front of him. So, God, Antonio Gibson looks really good, though.
He does look really good. And if he was on any other team, I would be more than thrilled with him. Maybe at the NFL trade deadline, some team will save Antonio Gibson. Not likely, but we can all hope and dream. All right, final would you rather. This is not fantasy related. Well, it could be, but it's really just fun related. Would you rather, if you were a Saints fan, would you rather have Drew Brees or Jameis Winston at quarterback? And why is the answer Jameis Winston?
I think that for fantasy purposes, we'd all love to see Michael Thomas just getting bombs from Winston, and Traquan Smith would too. This isn't a real debate, though, because Drew Brees is still way better. And
he's really good at throwing 3 yards down the field. But outside of that,
I mean, what works really well, maybe you want to cover this, Clark, but what works really well is that Michael Thomas can run a route all over the goddamn field, and Alvin Kamara is there. So the skill sets match up really well. As far as their, like, what they have in front of them, I mean, they got a lot of, like, pretty nice schedule matches coming up here with Carolina, a couple Atlanta dates, Philadelphia, Kansas City, Minnesota. Brees is going to be fine.
Yeah, Brees is still a much better quarterback than Jameis Winston. And I know that Jameis miraculously finished very highly in the fantasy ranks last year, being a horrible quarterback. And that very well could happen again. But I'll take a player who moves the offense better and scores a little bit more predictably. Also, who's been missing maybe the like top 2, 3, 4 wide receivers in the game and still done pretty well in Drew Brees. Jameis Winston would be fun, I think, for everyone other than New Orleans Saints fans.
I want a quarterback who doesn't look 10 yards down the field and say, nah, that's too much for me. and then dumps it off to Alvin Kamara. I mean, it's great for Alvin Kamara managers. Good on you.
Yeah. I just need Buffalo to score here so that they can cover.
Oh, let's talk about how Clyde Edwards-Helaire, again, just can't score touchdowns.
Still a huge game, though.
That's fine. Of course. But there's nothing quite like watching Clyde Edwards-Helaire, like, absolutely torch defenses and then get inside the 10-yard line and just be like, ow!
I love the
Oh, my God, he does have a huge game. 161 yards. Holy buckets.
From news happening, someone in one of my leagues offered me Le'Veon Bell for a first-round rookie pick next year after this news broke. I was like, get the fuck out of here with that. What are you doing? Anyway, everyone cares about my fantasy team.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we have this podcast, is to talk about our own fantasy leagues and then have everyone who listens to the show weigh in on it. And if you want to weigh on it some more, make sure you subscribe. Look at that transition. To the Fake Teams podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. That is how you'll not only get us, but also our fantasy basketball and baseball podcast. Follow us on Twitter at RB1 Podcast. You can follow myself at Pete M. Rogers. Follow Clark at NFL Clark and Nick at Ginger_Nick. I like how I point to you guys, even though you're not anywhere near me. We will be back at you on Thursday to talk some week 5, 7 starts and sits. Until then, peace.